Sunday morning is the time to talk Tennessee football. It's Sunday Sports Sound Off.
On the air for over 50 years.
Call in now at 656-9900 or 866-656-9900. And let's talk about the Volunteers.
Brought to you by your volunteer Toyota dealers. Fox Toyota, Green's Tractor, Knoxville Orthopedic Clinic, Great Clips, Iris Networks, TVA Energy Right Solutions, Oak Ridge Nissan, Pipe Wrench Plumbing, Jim Cogdell Dodge, the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, your local volunteer GMC dealership, Wow Cable, the U.S. Army, and Rusty Wallace Kia on Callahan.
Now with Tim Irwin, here's your host, Jimmy Himes, on 107.7 WIVK and the Sports Animal. This is Sunday Sports Sound Off.
In the latest game ever played in the regular season at Neyland Stadium, Tennessee falls to Texas A&M 34-13. The Aggies gunning for a college football playoff berth just physically dominated Tennessee. They dominated the run game, dominated time of possession, and they end up with a 21-point victory against the Vols. Welcome to Sunday Sports Sound Off. I'm Jimmy Himes, along with VFL Tim Irwin, a former star at the University of Tennessee, also at Central High School, and with the Minnesota Vikings. Tim Irwin, your thoughts on the Texas A&M Tennessee game?
I'm glad it's over. it was a whipping. The score wasn't as bad as the thrashing that we got. You see a team with a great quarterback play a team with two inexperienced quarterbacks, and Mond was fantastic. Every time we got close to him, he stepped up and took off, made a little move, threw a big completion. We just couldn't get off the field on third downs, and they kept the ball forever. I don't know what the final time was, but they must have had the ball three times as much as we did. And
yeah,
we had one quarterback made slow decisions on offense, and a couple of the sacks they got were coverage sacks where we didn't have anybody open. We weren't able to run the ball effectively. Missing our star, most talented running back hurt us for sure. But, no, it was just to line up and take a beating. I figured we'd get one. And we came out, started the game, zip, 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 right down the field. And we struggle. We change quarterbacks. He throws a bomb, beautiful catch. And it looks like we're going to get back in the game. Then we just can't get off the field on third down. If we stop them, it seems like we get a penalty. And it was a tough day at the office, that's for sure.
Yeah, I thought if there was one penalty that was more devastating than any, it's when Tennessee had Texas A&M stopped with a minute 38 left in the first half. And they called DeAndre Johnson for slapping the helmet of Kellen Mond, 15-yard penalty. Tennessee gets the ball there without the penalty. Instead, A&M goes down, scores at the end of the half to take a 24-13 lead. Tim, I thought that that was a devastating blow for Tennessee.
Yeah, it turned out to be the key play of the ball game, unfortunately. We just didn't compete with them anywhere. We couldn't seem to cut. Our coverage was good at times, but we couldn't seem to cover them long enough for our pass rushers to get there. When the pass rushers got there, Mond, who's a fantastic athlete, either stepped up and ran or just stepped a little sideways or popped up in the pocket and threw a strike. And he threw some strikes when they were covered, too. And, again, we did not tackle very well in the secondary. It was a hard-hitting game, but we didn't wrap up. We didn't get the guy down with the first tackle a lot of times. And we just couldn't get off the field on third down. We never got the ball back. And we got it back on a key interception, which looked like it might shift momentum. We peter out and die right away on the offensive part of that thing.
Yeah, because they had two illegal procedure penalties.
I thought if there were two key moments, it was the penalty at the end of the first half and then the two penalties that stopped the drive after the interception.
Right.
Really took Tennessee out of the game when they had a chance to be in the game there for a little while. I don't know that their talent was that overwhelming, but with their great quarterback play and their senior offensive line, they were just too much for us, Jimmy.
Yeah, and the time of possession was basically Texas A&M 44 minutes, Tennessee 16. Tennessee is slightly less than 16. A&M slightly more than 44.
We only had the ball a quarter of the game, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's the way you look at it, yeah.
Yeah. And then on the third down, the third down conversions that you were alluding to, A&M 10 of 14, Tennessee 1 of 6. Tennessee had one third down in the first half. They hardly ever had the ball. And they were 0 for 1 in the first half. So, yeah, that was Texas A&M. And their line of scrimmage with their offensive line was outstanding. And then you're right about Mon. He just continued to make the plays when he needed to, whether it was throwing the football, whether it was running the football. One thing I really was disappointed with in Tennessee's pass coverage was they didn't do a good job covering the backs out of the backfield. And there was one time the guy was wide open and Mon threw it short of him, which would have been a completion for another first down for him. But I didn't think Tennessee did a good job covering the backs out of the backfield.
Henry kept getting picked by the route and not being able to get over and get the back. I mean, that happened 3-4 times. He just couldn't get there. And, it was just simple pitch and catch. I thought at first Tennessee did a good job stopping the run. As the second half progressed, they just got worn out, Jimmy. There just wasn't enough of them.
Yeah.
But I thought at first they did a pretty decent job on the run. It was the passing of Kellen Mond that kept them going. And in the second half, they finally just wore out. And, again, not good tackling in the secondary.
Well, and Isaiah Spiller, who's a really good back, he's second in the SEC in rushing yards per game. He had 89 yards, but it took him 26 carries to get there. You'll take that. That's not bad at all.
Oh, yeah.
And where he hurt him was he had six catches for 60 yards. But then, as you were talking about, and I ain't exactly right, and then when they wore him down, they put in this Anaya Smith in there, and he had 70 yards on 8 carries. And I think Tennessee's defense was kind of gassed at that point from staying on the field.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. They were both physically and mentally gassed. I thought the guys played hard. The pass rush just couldn't get there. We could not generate a pass rush. We couldn't even generate one blitzing. And when we did blitz, we'd get beat in man coverage. And it just was it just seemed like Jimbo Fisher's team exploited all of Tennessee's weaknesses. And it was a rough day. It was painful.
All right, I'm gonna touch on my thumbs up, thumbs down. Then I'm going to touch on the NCAA situation and the bowl situation as I see it. Tennessee, thumbs up, opening drive, 5-play, 75 yards, touchdown pass to Jacob Warren. That's his first touchdown reception. Really beautiful play and a nice throw there. Also, JT Shroud coming in, the 46-yard touchdown pass to Cedric Tillman, which was a beautiful throw. In fact, it was a number 4 top play on SportsCenter's top 10. Alante Taylor's interception at the goal line, he returned at 45 yards. Another thumbs up, really nice play on his part and a good return. And Paxton Brooks, 47.2 yards per punt. I thought he had another really good game for Tennessee. I didn't have a whole lot of other thumbs up from that game. The thumbs down, the third down defense, the third down offense, which we alluded to, the time of possession. The total yards, 497 to a season low 213 for Tennessee. The number of plays run, 79 to 37. I cannot remember a disparity quite like that in a Tennessee game. Tennessee's run game without Eric Gray, 17 carries, 24 yards. That's 1.4 yards a carry. Pretty much non-existent. Also, DeAndre Johnson's penalty that we talked about, the two false start penalties on Tennessee's two seniors, Josh Palmer and Ty Chandler. Covering backs out of the backfield, I gave him a thumbs down for that. The sack fumble on Harrison Bailey. The one thing he does, and it was alluded to, and it has been several times by Jeremy Pruitt, he just has a tendency to hold the ball a little bit too long, and he had a turnover on that particular situation. Here's a play, and I don't like this, Tim. You may see this differently. I understand swing passes. I think they're great. But when you throw a swing pass, make sure it's a forward pass, not a lateral. I've seen too many
passes.
Yeah,
I think.
Go ahead.
I think they got to share the responsibility on that, Jimmy. Part of that's on the quarterback. Part of it's on the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to, you can't make that a lateral.
Yeah, because
it can't be a lateral. It's too dangerous.
If it's a high throw, a low throw, or a dropped ball, then that's a live ball. And so there's just no reason to take that risk. And I've seen it at all levels, not just at Tennessee. I've seen it at a lot of levels where they've done that. I just don't like that. Take the potential turnover or loss out of the equation there. All right, those are my thumbs down. Now we're going to touch on a couple of things. The NCAA situation. The University of Tennessee Compliance Office is conducting an investigation within the football program for alleged recruiting violations for extra benefits. We don't know the result of that. I am told it's been an aggressive and intense investigation. It started either in early December or late November. And I'm just told that it doesn't look good, but we don't know the situation. Now, it had been reported that Eric Gray and Brian Maurer did not play due to COVID reasons. I had somebody else that told me that's not true, that decision on them not playing wasn't made until Saturday morning. They know about COVID issues on Friday because they get the test results back then. That indicates that it was not about COVID for Gray and Maurer. I do believe it was COVID for Jay Graham, running backs coach, and Derek Ansley, the defensive coordinator. So the result of all this, I don't know. I also understand there's some academic issues with one of those two players that didn't play, but I don't know if that's the exact reason that they didn't play. So that's what we know about the NCAA. It's a UT investigation, which NCAA is aware of, about potential violations within the program. And, again, we don't know the extent of that. Now, the bowl picture. I talked to Steve Earhart. He is the executive director of the Liberty Bowl, and he said the Liberty Bowl would love to have Tennessee. He also told me, I said, look, there are teams opting out all over the place. There are at least 11 teams around the country that have opted out of playing in a bowl. LSU has a self-imposed bowl ban over NCAA violations. He said that the SEC office has assured them that all the SEC teams are on board to play in a bowl game. Now, could that change if they find out something about Tennessee regarding violations? Could they self-impose a bowl ban? I guess that's possible. But the Liberty Bowl would love to have Tennessee. And it would be obviously a shorter stay if you make a bowl trip. It's not going to be 6 days, more likely 2 or 3 days. The Liberty Bowl would seat 12 to 13,000. They would accommodate the families of coaches, of players, of athletic department personnel. And they also have all their title sponsors. So they would like to have Tennessee. We'll see where that goes. If Tennessee doesn't go to the Liberty Bowl, I think the Music City Bowl's in play, but I also think that there are other teams that are higher on the pecking order than Tennessee that might end up in the Music City Bowl. And the other possibility would be in Birmingham. That's the outlook for Tennessee. Jeremy Pruitt said that they would absolutely accept a bowl bid if they got one. And these, for folks that don't know, the bowls don't offer the bids, so to speak, or make the selections. The SEC office does that. The SEC office... what you do is if you're Tennessee, you say, these are the bowls that I want to go to, and this is my order. And then the SEC figures out, they slot people where they're going to go. So that's been in place for several years now. So that's the bowl situation for Tennessee. Will there be some players at Tennessee that opt out of going to bowl? Well, Jerry Garantano's already entered the transfer portal, so I wouldn't expect him to play. And don't be surprised if he goes to Arkansas State, where Butch Jones was hired. Butch Jones signed Garantano, and Butch Jones has a relationship with the dad, so that might be a landing spot. Could there be other players that opt out? Could be. And by the way, excuse me, Brandon Kennedy, Tennessee center, made it clear that he is not going to return to Tennessee to play and have a seventh year of the NCAA. So that's what we know about that situation, the bowl situation. We should know today. Now, at noon, there'll be a college football selection show, and they will pick those teams. And then I am told that the bowls for the other SEC teams, after they do the college football playoff and then the New Year's Six, then the rest of the bowl slots will be between 3 and 5 today. That's when Tennessee should know its bowl destination. And I do expect them to be selected. Even at 3 and 7, I expect them to be selected. So that's what we know about that situation. And tell you what, let's go ahead and we've got a caller here. We will jump to the phones and bring in Hitch. Hitch, you're on Sunday Sports Sound Off.
Well, guys, it's my pleasure to be here. How are y'all doing this morning?
Doing fine, Hitch.
Well, that's the reason I wanted to talk to you this morning, Jimmy, because there's a lot of rumors, innuendos, and certain things flying around about status of Tennessee, and I know you'd have a heads up to the university. So you don't think this looks too serious, or you don't know?
No, I think it is serious. Absolutely.
Oh, do you?
Serious. When you're talking to that many people, and when I was led to believe, when you're sitting two players because of this investigation, that's what I was told. And when you're talking to numerous assistants, and when you're talking to recruits that went to other schools, I'm told it looks bad. The optics are bad on this situation.
Wow. So you don't know self-imposed sanctions or anything like that?
No, it's way too early for that. I think that you have to have a determination before you have self-imposed penalties. LSU already knew, the NCAA said, hey, we got these violations, and LSU self-imposed. I don't know when Tennessee is going to have an answer. And this is an internal thing. This is UT compliance that's leading this investigation. I don't know when they'll have an answer as to whether or not they think Tennessee should or shouldn't go to a bowl game. I don't know that.
I'm going to ask you the hard reporter's journalist question. You don't think there's any thing tied back to something, letting him go and, you know, cutting down on the monies we have to pay him or anything like that? There's nothing like that going on, right?
I don't know the answer to that. I'll say this. If there are violations and they are tied to the head coach, they could fire the head coach for cause and not have to pay him a buyout.
That's true.
I'm not saying that's what's happening, but I'm saying I'm just giving you the fact. If he's tied to this and Tennessee wants to fire him, they can do it for cause without paying him.
Well, as we said last week, we've been 20 years, you know, without a championship in the great state of Tennessee, I didn't know if he'd even stay here on his own merit if there wasn't anything else. But I appreciate you putting everything out on the table. You and the judge, have a great day.
Thanks, Itch. Appreciate it. Yeah, there's still a lot of unknowns about this situation. So to draw conclusions at this point, I wouldn't be able to do that. All right, when we come back, we'll continue to take your phone calls. If you want to join us, 656-9900. 1-866-656-9900. With Judge Tim Irwin, I'm Jimmy Himes. This is Sunday Sports Sound Off.
Well, I hadn't seen no article or anything like that, but anytime in college football or college athletics, you have typical compliance stuff, and that's all I know.
Comments from Jeremy Pruitt post-game when asked about what he knows of the investigation regarding potential NCAA violations. Welcome back to Sunday Sports Sound Off. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Judge Tim Irwin. Tim, this is it's a difficult situation. I know people want answers now about this, but we're not going to have them now, and I don't know them. It's just going to – anytime you have a situation like this, it can be a distraction for your program.
You're telling me there's a compliance issue going on and the head coach doesn't know what it is? I find that amazing. That's interesting. Jimmy, I want to go back to the bowl situation.
Okay.
I don't think there's anybody in the land that feels like a bowl game is earned. I realize that's extra practice time and ability to get better with young quarterbacks and start looking at next year. But how are these bowl games making it, only putting a few thousand people in the stands? Are there enough money to run them? Do you know about the financing of these things?
Yeah, I asked that very question of Steve Earhart, who's the executive director of the Liberty Bowl, and he said, fortunately for them, their sponsors are staying loyal to them. So they have AutoZone as their title sponsor. They also have sponsorship from FedEx. They have sponsorship from Bass Pro Shops. And that's how they're doing it, along with the TV money. So, and then I asked him, I said, well, a lot of these bowls donate to charity. He said, I can't speak to that. He said, I don't know what's going to happen with charitable donations coming from bowl games. But he said with the sponsorship that they have and then the TV money. Now, he did say that there could be a difference in the money allotment to teams. In other words, if you were going to a bowl game and your allotment was $1.5 million, it may not be $1.5 million. It may be less than that. But and they are allowing 12,000 to 13,000. But the main revenue is coming from their sponsorship and from TV dollars.
Interesting. It costs money to keep your program open, to practice and prepare and travel and equip for a bowl game.
Yes.
I mean, there's a cost to the schools as well. I just wonder how we're affording it in this day and time. I mean, there's a lot of unknowns right now. Some of the other things you said, I did not expect Brandon Kennedy to come back and play football a seventh year. He's got like 3 or 4 degrees now. And well, what a great kid. And what a tremendous get that was for Tennessee. And, we've been blessed by a couple of guys that left Alabama, him and Kamara. What great finds. I mean, and what a great career he had here at the university. I can really only remember one bad game, and I think it was his first one, and that was West Virginia, where he played awful.
Yeah,
against that senior nose guard that had transferred in there and ran all over him. But we'll miss him. I got a lot of confidence in Cooper Mays coming up. Obviously, he needs to keep working and get bigger and stronger. But he will. I think he's a heady, sharp player. Our two freshmen from Catholic had pretty good years. And that's a good thing. We have some other people from Catholic that were great football players that weren't wearing the orange. You know, we got to see one of them playing at Clemson over the weekend. What a difference he would have made to Tennessee in the four years he's been at Clemson.
He had a great game against Notre Dame.
Yeah, he sure did. And I was surprised at the score. I wasn't surprised that both teams scored a lot of points. I was surprised that Florida was able to get back in that game. And, you know, I don't know who's going to win the Heisman Trophy. But after watching that game last night, number 22 has got to be considered somewhere. It doesn't always have to be a quarterback. Jimmy, he's phenomenal. If Florida had him, those two touchdowns he made with the spins, I was just in awe. I was just in awe watching him play.
He's a great player. He scored 5 touchdowns. Najee Harris, he had 178 yards and 2 touchdowns. He had 3 receiving touchdowns, which, gosh, that may be close to what his career mark was. But he was phenomenal. Tim, I thought about that. And when I look at what Alabama put on the field this year, I don't know if there's ever been a better triplet situation of a quarterback, Mac Jones, a receiver, Devontae Smith, and a running back, Najee Harris, in the history of the SEC. I don't think I can name a better set of triplets than that in this league ever. I think they were phenomenal.
I mean, you're talking about in that ball game last night, just glancing at it for a minute, you can count 5 first-round draft choices.
Yeah.
5 of them.
Yeah.
Right off the bat. That's not even getting to the linemen. Because there's one tackle that's probably going to be a first-rounder. I mean, it was an unbelievable display of talent out there. And Clemson looked powerful and strong. Ohio State did not. But I don't think the top 4 is going to change with today's vote. I don't much see how it can. But anyway, it was interesting.
Yeah.
And great quarterbacks make great football teams. That was just an amazing display of talent yesterday.
Mac Jones was 33 of 43 for 418 yards and 5 touchdowns for Alabama. Kyle Trask was 26 of 40 for 408 yards against a heck of a defense with 3 touchdowns. Kadarius Toney had 153 yards receiving and a touchdown. Kyle Pitts had 129 yards receiving and a touchdown. 52 to 46. In the SEC championship game. Unbelievable. You said you didn't
How times have changed.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It was Was it 9 years ago that LSU beat Alabama like 9-6 in Tuscaloosa, and then they had a rematch and it was 21-0, and LSU never crossed midfield, something like that? Yeah, they've changed. I want to go back to the college football. Obviously, Alabama's in. Obviously, Clemson's in. And I think obviously, Ohio State's in. Do you think they go with Notre Dame over Texas A&M?
I don't know. I mean, you got 2 1-loss teams. You got one of them on the upswing, one of them seemingly on the decline. But, I mean, I'm not sure, Jimmy. I'm just not sure. I have no idea. I don't know how I'd vote. I'd have to go back and study, but I'm trying to think of their records and who they've played and how they've done their whole body of work. So Texas A&M has one loss, correct?
A&M has one loss. Notre Dame has one loss. A&M has played, they're 8-1. Notre Dame's 10-1, so two more games. A&M has their best win, and their only really good win, to be honest with you, is over Florida. So they beat Florida. Yeah. That's it. They don't have another win over a team that is currently ranked. Notre Dame defeated Clemson, which is impressive, and North Carolina, which is really good. So Notre Dame has one more good win than A&M has. And they also beat a higher-ranked team. I think they're going to go with Notre Dame. Now, having said that, Notre Dame getting blown out by Clemson like that, it gives you pause for concern a little bit because of what you just saw. And I think
if I was Alabama, I'd rather play Notre Dame than Texas A&M.
How come?
I just think Texas A&M's got such great balance and the ability to run the football and keep the ball away from the other team.
Yeah.
That would bother me more than Notre Dame style of play if I was Alabama looking on.
Yeah.
And Texas A&M's got that good pass rush. I don't know. I mean, Notre Dame's got some good points too. But I think I'd rather play Notre Dame right now than Texas A&M after watching those two football games yesterday. I think I would if I was Alabama.
I think so, too. And A&M's offensive line is terrific, which allows them, I think, to convert a lot of third downs and eat up the clock.
They were. I thought they held more than they got called in that game. Not that it made a difference in that football game.
Yeah.
I do think that was a fumble down on the goal line. No question in my mind that was a fumble. I don't know how they couldn't reverse that call. I thought he lost that ball. Just because your hand's touching it doesn't mean you're controlling it. I thought that was a fumble. And I thought the one they let stand when our quarterback got hit, I thought his hand was moving forward. I thought we lost both those calls. We lost them on the field because they decided it was too close to overturn. But I thought they hamburgered that up a little bit, and those were big plays.
Rogers Redding, the replay expert that they had, agreed with you. He thought his hand was going forward. He said he thought it was an incomplete pass. It was close.
I thought it was.
Yeah.
I thought it was, and then I thought we have gotten so cautious about not blowing the whistle that we're making more calls on the field be fumbles. Yet the one down on the goal line where he's laying down, his body's not on the ground, and the football is below his hand. You know what I'm talking about?
No. What play are you talking about?
Well, never mind. Just the main one was the throw.
Harrison Bailey?
Harrison Bailey's throw was going forward. It was definitely going forward, I thought. I thought it was, and I thought we got the short end of the stick on that. I think they're letting them play so much, trying to keep from blowing an inadvertent whistle and making a mistake and stopping the play, which is not reviewable, and they're trained to do that, that it's making those calls more likely to be a fumble than an incomplete pass. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think we're getting unjust results because of the policy, let them play. And I don't know how to fix it. It's a problem with the rules. But I do think Tennessee got short end of the stick on that one. Those two penalties, those three penalties, the two offsides and we've already talked about that, the inadvertent slap on the head. I mean, those two were just devastating.
Yeah.
The inadvertent slap on the head, I can see how that happens. The two penalties by two seniors, that's inexcusable.
Yeah.
After a big play to lose momentum because of that. And we got behind the sticks with those two young pups back there. It was really tough. Really tough.
By the way, with Najee Harris, he did not have a receiving touchdown all year until he got three against against Florida. But he had seven last year. Anyway, but yeah, he's a great football player. You're right about that. All right.
I don't know. Who would you vote for? You get to vote for the Heisman Trophy, don't you?
I do. I'm gonna vote for Mac Jones. He's had a phenomenal year on the number one team in the country. And I'm going to tell you what, I'm also considering Devontae Smith. I think Devontae Smith's had a brilliant year. He's a great receiver. I think he's the best receiver in the country.
I hate with modern football, it seems like it's always going to be a quarterback.
Yeah.
And there's some great players that aren't quarterbacks that are overlooked, I think, because of the sensationalism with the passing game. And, you know, we talked about it last week and a few weeks before that about how every kid now, every great athlete kid wants to grow up and be a receiver.
Yeah.
They don't want to be running backs or corners or safeties. They all want to be receivers. And you're seeing such a leap of talent at that position. I mean, just throw it up in the air and your guy's better, he's going to get it. And I thought we saw that play out a bunch. With very good defensive backs in that game, particularly for Alabama, I mean, they still couldn't cover those guys from Florida.
Yeah.
Good offense beats good defense.
It sure
and
does.
I think even Saban's alluded to that this year.
He has.
And we have missed the train. Our passing game has been sick all year. You can look at our statistics. They bear it out. Our third down percentage is horrible. You know, our best receiver out of the backfield didn't play yesterday. And you can blame whatever you want on COVID. COVID affected every team in the nation. Yeah, it affected some worse than others. But it's been there. That presence has been there for everybody. You can't make those kind of excuses. I'm concerned. I don't want my school to be rule breakers. I'm concerned that somebody on our staff has done something. You know, it could be – you know, it could be like the Bruce Pearl situation, had a barbecue or something. Could be something minor like that. But if you lie about it, we know that can turn into something major.
Yes.
That was completely stupid. But it could, I mean, it could be something along those lines, or it could be something major. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows when those guys get investigating? When I was doing some agent work, when I first started the NCAA, had one small office in Indianapolis. And the manual was, you know, about one book, about an inch thick. Now the manual, several volumes, and they got a whole building there and at their headquarters. And no telling how many employees. And they've really gone powerful, and there's so many rules and regulations and dead periods and off periods. I don't know how you keep up with it. So it could be something minor like that. It could be something major. We'll just have to wait and see. But I find it incredible that we're at the end of the season and there's a violation, and maybe players have been set out because of that violation, and the head coach doesn't know what the violation is. I find that incredible.
Yep. That's Tim Irwin. I'm Jimmy Himes. When we come back, we'll have more. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. You're listening to Sunday Sports Sound Off.
Time.
I don't think that anything would change from our end. So we're preparing like we're going to be in a bow. If we're not, we're not. But that's the only way we know how to do is just prepare to move forward like we were.
That's Jeremy Pruitt when talking about the potential for a bowl bid. At 3-7, Tennessee is eligible. I know the Liberty Bowl would like them. I think the Music City and I think the Birmingham Bowls are also in play. Welcome back to Sunday Sports Sound Off with VFL Tim Irwin. I'm Jimmy Himes. Let's go back to the phones where our next caller is David. Good morning, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. Just a few things. Jimmy, I'm the guy that, 28 sack kind of guy.
Yes, sir.
And just kind of, I don't know if you ever followed up on that, but just for grins this morning when I was eating breakfast, I was just looking at, as it turns out, Clemson, not including this past weekend, has 38 sacks. Notre Dame had 28. Notre Dame had 28. And then Ohio State had 15 through five games, so they were on track for 30. Now, when I originally told you that, I was just applying that to what works at Tennessee.
Right.
But I just for grins, that seems to be an important stat.
Yeah.
The second part of it, and I just want to thank you guys. I'm not a big media person, and, I really don't watch TV except for football in the fall, and I don't get a chance anymore to listen to the radio except in the morning. So I really appreciate you and Judge Irwin during the season taking time out of your busy days away from your family to have this show. Jimmy, I find you to be, the media today is different than it was when I was growing up. I'm 67. And I applaud you because you're very professional. You take the time to accurately research what you say. And I like the fact that when you do need to correct a caller, you do it in a very nice way, which I like. And Judge Irwin, I always appreciate your, I'm going to use the word unfiltered in a good way, because we know because of your experience here as a local product, not only in high school, but in college and then through the pros and, your overall experience that, when you tell us something about, whether something's holding or, something related to football that you can relate to from experience, in addition to an opinion, is greatly appreciated because it helps to put things in focus. You guys deal from the intellect side and not the emotion side, which a lot of callers do. So I just want you both to know, just for me personally, I always look forward in the fall to listening to you guys. Hopefully you guys will be together next year, and Merry Christmas to both of you.
Well, Dave, we appreciate it. Very nice of you to say that. Happy holidays to you as well. And I'm paying attention to those sack numbers. You brought that to my attention. And whenever David leaves us, we're not going to say we sacked him. Thanks, David. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Eddie. Eddie, you're on Sports Sound Off.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Morning, Eddie.
Hey, two things. One, first of all, I think this is a year maybe not to consider bowl season a bowl game, because you're going to have opt-outs, you're going to have some COVID. It's going to be a downer for everybody, and the kids are not going to have their heart in it. The time to move to the next focus on the off-season and stuff. But I just don't see the way back for us being any other way than a more dynamic quarterback than we've been able to recruit. That's one thing. And then switching to the playoff, Ohio State had two wins over winning teams. Northwestern is a fairly good team. Indiana's a good team. But when you decide to play a five-game season, I don't think that's enough body of work, even if you win. They had four wins against – four of their six games against really poor teams, okay, losing records. And I just think what A&M accomplishes, or any of the other three, the other people that are being considered, I think if I'm voting, Ohio State doesn't make it because they decided to go late. They started early. They're going to do the trendy thing and stay out, and they ought to pay for that. So, undefeated in a down Big Ten year is not very impressive to me. What do y'all think?
Tim, you have thoughts on that?
Well, I think you make a nice argument. I don't think the committee will punish the Big Ten for being safe. I don't think anybody can figure out what to do about the pandemic right now, and I'm talking about some people. Everybody's got an idea of what it'll do to get this, what it'll take to get this country well, and I think football's in the same boat as any other administrator. I know I've tried to plan for it with my job and my court and my employees and keep everybody safe, and I've learned you really can't plan for this thing. It changes week to week, day to day, and it plans for you. You just react to whatever it gives you. And I don't know if the Big Ten kept people safe, not having football or not. But I hear your argument, and I hear that Ohio State really hadn't beaten anybody but Northwestern and Indiana that would be in the hunt anyway. And yeah. Texas A&M has beaten some worthy opponents. They beat Florida, who's a good football team, who played the number one team in the nation last night, right down to the wire. And yeah, I mean, I like that option better. I like that option better than throwing Notre Dame out that's won 10 football games.
Right.
Yeah.
One last quick thing from an offensive standpoint, and both you guys know this stuff, I don't. What do you do, and how do you not focus on such poor second half offensive performance for the future? I mean, I don't know how many games where we just got clobbered and shut out, drubbed points to points. We didn't score in the second half yesterday either, did we?
Nope.
I mean, if I'm the offensive coordinator, do you work on that, Judge, in practice about crucial situations, second half, no mistakes? You got to turn a turnover into 3 points or something to, I mean, is that a in Cheney's evaluation, how do you have that poor performance with pretty good athletes for a whole season in the second half?
I think there's a couple of dynamics going on.
Thanks, Eddie. Appreciate it.
I think that Cheney comes out with a decent game plan to start the game. You see the quarterback getting the ball out of their hands quick. They know where they're going. It's scripted. That first drive is scripted. And he calls some things that works. In the second half, everybody knows everybody. Everybody knows that by that time, teams know how Tennessee's trying to attack them, and they shut it down. That doesn't explain it all, but that explains part of it to me. I think if you look at Tennessee, they're better when they're scripted. I think our young quarterbacks are definitely better when they're throwing to their first option. You know, the beautiful pass that the beautiful bomb we threw down the field, I mean, that was drop back and throw it to that guy. He's single covered. He's my guy. Throw it. You know, the wheel route to the tight end, I mean, that was called. That was the primary receiver on that play. Look off, throw to the wheel route. And I think when we're doing that kind of thing, we're better. But when you have to ad lib, when you have to do what Mon did to us the whole game, where you don't hit the first guy, where you have to step up, where you have to take off running, where you have to scramble and make a play, that's what our inexperienced QBs can't do. A couple of those sacks yesterday were dead bang coverage sacks.
Yeah.
There was plenty of time to get rid of the football, and we held it too long. A couple of them were getting whipped. We've had a little bit of a problem picking up the twist late in the season. But I think it's the inability of the quarterbacks to make plays on their own without it being scripted and being told what to do. One of them's too slow, and one of them doesn't seem to be able to find the secondary receivers and make the good throw off the move. Sometimes they look like $1 million, and sometimes they look like 50 cents out there. And I don't know how to explain it. Our defense in the second half gets worn out. The other team keeps the ball. We get fewer opportunities. You know, I don't know. We've not been a good second half team, though. That's apparent if you look at the body of work.
Yep.
I can't explain it all, but I think that's part of it. We're better when we're scripted.
Yeah. That's Tim Irwin. I'm Jimmy Himes. When we come back, we'll have more. This is Sunday Sports Sound Off.
You know, the entire year, you know, we've really, when it's come to our guys from injury to COVID or for whatever reasons, we've always said they're unavailable.
That's Jeremy Pruitt when asked why Eric Gray was unavailable to play yesterday against Texas A&M. That decision, I was told, wasn't made until Saturday morning. Welcome back to Sunday Sports Roundup. I'm Jimmy Himes, along with Tim Irwin. And I'd reported earlier with Eric Gray, I had been told that it was related to the Tennessee's internal investigation regarding potential NCAA violations. Doesn't mean he did anything wrong, but if your name comes up, the safer route is to not play him. And by the way, Tim Irwin joins us on the Stanley Fenton Gates hotline. Regarding Ohio State, I wanted to revisit that a second. When I've watched them play, and I know everybody's not perfect every week, when I watched them play, I think they passed the eye test for being in the top four in the playoff. However, I would also point out that I thought Florida, a 23-point favorite, would beat LSU. So the more games you play, the more opportunity to get upset. So who's to say if Ohio State had played three or four more games, somebody else wouldn't have beaten that? We don't know that. And that's what throws us a little bit into a quandary about trying to figure out what to do. But I think, Tim, I think the caller made a good point about Ohio State playing fewer games. But I actually think in watching them, they probably are one of the four best teams in the country. So if you're on the committee, what do you do?
I don't know, Jimmy. I'm glad I'm not on it.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's a good argument. This kind of year would be another good argument for expanding that thing a little bit. You know, I think eight would be great this year. Who knows who's going to emerge?
Yeah,
eight would be great because you have the Cinderella story of your, you know, your
group of five, like Cincinnati.
Group of five, yes. Yeah. I knew five was in there somewhere.
Yeah,
and we've changed the name so many times over the years. I tend to dwell in the past, but you know, I'd like to see some of those schools have a shot at it, have the Cinderella story like you do in basketball, where you have, I don't think we could have a 64 team playoff, but I think we could justify eight.
Yeah.
And I think eight would be good, and the bowl games would mean something, and you would make it work. I think, you know, you start out with eight with just like you do now with one playing eight, two playing seven.
Right.
Three playing six, four playing five, and go from there. I think it'd be kind of cool. It would mess up your conference championship weekend. I don't know if there'd be time to do conference championships and eight, but I'd rather have the eight than the conference championships anyway.
I think we'll get to that. I just think that it'll be after this contract runs out, which has several more years on it, but I think we'll eventually get to that. All right, when we come back, we'll continue to take your phone calls. We'll hear more from Tennessee coach Jeremy Pruitt, also from Alante Taylor, as well as Cedric Tillman. You're listening to Sunday Sports Soundoff.